The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stattmiller, with you on this Wednesday, 20 November 2019. And as I'm known to do, not announcing people as a tease to tune in to tomorrow's program. That's why you have to be here every day. I've got Frank D. Murphy on with me. Now, who's Frank D. Murphy? Well, you might not have heard of him, but if you were a Tampa Bay Buccaneer fan, or Houston Texans, or Miami Dolphins, or Toronto Argonauts, or Hamilton Tiger Cats, or a Florida Tusker, you might know his name. The guy was born in Jacksonville, Florida, and he was a receiver in the NFL. He played his college football. He's drafted, by the way, by the Chicago Bears back in 2000. He played his college football for the Kansas State Wildcats. And he is on a very interesting mission. He's got a book out, The Man Behind the Helmet. And with that introduction, hello, Frank. How are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
Fair to middling, mostly good. And down here in Texas, that means so-so, but it could be worse. Your publicist sent me an email. I looked at it today. I read it. And I said, sure. You know, I haven't done anything with NFL players. We used to have a guy by the name of Philip Paz Derrick that was on the network, and he was an offensive lineman for the Dallas Cowboys. And the guy knew his stuff. I mean, he really did. And I'm an NFL fan. And the reason some people don't like that. They figure it's a distraction from the real problems that are going on in the world. And I look at it, Frank, as we have 60 minutes. You man up, you get on the field, you go head-to-head with each other, and you find out, both following the same set of rules, who the best team is. Is that about the encapsulation of what football is and the game itself?
Yeah, it's a little bit more deeper than that, but I think the overall view that we have given our fans, we have taught them how to live a fantasy through us, and that can be good and that can be bad, because fantasies don't come to pass most of the time. And when reality hit, that we're not just here to make the fans' fantasy come through, because fan is short for fantasy. So I think it can put a little stain on who we are as athletes and what we're called to do, that we're bigger than just catching, running, and, you know, sprinting and dunking and catching touchdowns and things of that nature.
In all of that's fine, and all that's glorious. The odds of getting into the NFL, there are young men out there that have aspirations to get into the NFL, but that is a tough thing to do. There's only so many positions open per team, and there's only so many teams, and that's it. Now, you might luck out, you might get on a team, but you might not. It's finite, and there's more, in other words, there's more people trying to get in than it's actually there playing the game. Now, Frank, your approach to what you are doing right now, what was behind you writing the book, The Man Behind the Helmet? What was going on? What motivated you to do this?
I think the things that motivate me is not just necessarily one thing. It's probably a collective things that motivate me, that people really didn't know the man behind the helmet, really didn't understand me as a man. I'll point to myself. And what I have to do and what I've been through and where I'm at now, and, you know, and what it takes to wear that helmet and what it takes to be in the NFL, what it takes to get in the NFL. And like you said, there's thousands of people coming out of your position each week, not just season. Throughout the week, it's new people being brought in for workouts. It's ongoing. So I think, and that's why I try to give most people that I talk to oversight and an overview of what it is to be behind that helmet. And that was one of the reasons that intrigued me to write a book and tell my life story.
Well, it's been an interesting story. We only have an hour here, and if we delved into your past, I'd have to kick every other host off the network and stay live until 11 p.m. But suffice to say, you've had your opportunities, and some of those opportunities didn't work out. Now, at that point, what did Frank D. Murphy do? Did he give up and roll over, feel sorry for himself, or did he get back up?
That's a great question. I got back up, but it's the reason why. There's a lot of opportunities out there, and when you look at opportunities like obligation, like somebody owe you something, most times you won't put in the correct effort and hard work to be successful, and I begin to learn that. So I stopped looking at anything like an obligation. I started looking at like a great opportunity, and that helped me get back up, because everybody in life is going to be faced with something to make them give up. The question is, will they give up? And I can honestly say I didn't give up. I actually strapped my cleats on, and I felt like this is what I want to do, so I'm going to give it everything I have. So when I look myself in the mirror, it will reveal that I gave it all I got.
Well, there is, I don't know if you ever heard Michael Irvin's, and this wasn't a motivational speech. We got a lot of motivational speakers out there. And Michael Irvin has had his problems. They weren't really made all that public when he was receiver for the Dallas Cowboys, but he got jammed up pretty good. And he got himself through that. And the man outside of football, he was a pro guy. I mean, this guy, he's one of the best receivers that the Dallas Cowboys ever had, the most consistent. And then he ran into some problems, and he straightened himself out and got back to football, did his football thing at the end of his football career. He got into sports programming and a lot of different other things. And Michael Irvin's still out there chugging. But I want you to hear something. I don't know if you've ever heard this. He was addressing, was it the 2010 or 2011, Mike, draft class? 2012? At any rate, Frank, this is only a couple minutes long. Take a listen to what Michael Irvin told these rookies coming in.
In exchange for a clean name. Here's what else he told them.
I want you to understand who you are, what you have. Because now you are in the NFL. You are part of something bigger than you. And we must treat it as such. We must treat it as such. The Bible speaks on these things. It says sometimes our gifts can take us in a place that our person is not prepared to go. What does it mean by that? What does it mean? I'll talk to me, a young Michael Irvin coming from the ghettos of Fort Lauderdale. It says, Michael, your football ability can get you out of the ghetto. It'll take you places that your person is not prepared to go. When I got in the league, I didn't have a supposed. I wish I would have had somebody to tell me some things. We didn't have it. So coming from the ghetto, I'm in the league now, and I walk in a club, man, I'm the man. I'm the man. And I let somebody walk up and say something to me out of the side of his mouth. Who you talking to? What are you talking to? I whoop your butt. That's my gift. Has taken me to a place that my person is not ready to go. And I go back talking to my boys, saying, dog, I ain't gonna let nobody disrespect me like that, dog. I ain't gonna let disrespect. Words. You're talking about words. Fighting over words. You know what? In the ghetto, you had nothing. So words meant everything. So somebody saying something, you think you feel disrespect. You are respected right now. 250 spots. 70,000 people wanted them, and you got them. You're a champion. So when you walk in a spot and somebody that didn't put in the work that you put in, because he's not determined enough, he doesn't know how to get his butt up when he doesn't feel like getting up and go to work, he's going to take the easy road by saying something to you. And you revert back to where you come from instead of being where you are. We must, and I want you to hear me quite carefully. We must stop letting the ignorance of our youth and our history prevent us from our destiny. Hear me out. We must stop letting the ignorance of our youth and our destiny and our history prevent us from our destiny. What is that ignorance? What I call ghetto fabulous mentality. That's why I'm keeping it real, dog. I'm gonna keep it real. Let me tell you something, man. Let me tell you about this keeping it real stuff. All my keep it real partners testified against me. They ran right to the DA. Oh yeah, Michael did. They kept it real. I'm staying out of jail. They won't be, Michael did. Michael Vick stood up here and he told you. All his keep it real friends, they kept it real. They ran right to the police. I'm gonna keep it real. He did it. All your keep it real friends, I promise you, they gonna keep it real on you.
They'll keep it real on you. Have you ever heard that before, Frank?
No, I haven't.
Well, I'll tell you what. If there's any way that you can get to Michael Irvin and help spread this message, that you've got plays going on right now. They're looking at making a movie. Drop the bomb on me here, man. What is it that people are going to learn by listening and following what Frank D. Murphy is doing and what he's talking about? What are you looking to do?
Well, I think, man, most importantly, that I'm trying to visualize and help them visualize and see that sacrifice, second chances don't come around a lot. Where I'm from, where I was from, I can talk from the same platform that Mike talked from. Where I'm from, you know, I didn't know if I was going to live or die when I had two guns to my head. I didn't know when I was facing time in jail for being at the wrong place at the wrong time and was facing 5 to 10 years. I didn't know when two guys started shooting right there in front of me. You know, when you from places like that, the hardest thing to do is to speak from your past hurt, your past lesson, your past pain, and erase the residue of your environment and your neighborhood that you've been in for 15 to 22 years. So I know people going to hear me speak for an hour, Michael Irvin speak for an hour, but an hour not enough to overpower 15 years of an environment that you had no choice to be in. You, as a kid, there's no choice. Where you at is where you at. And I started to learn that I had to do more than just mentor kids and motivate them and give them this rah-rah speech. I had to put some tools in place to help change the way they think. I had to get these kids to look in the mirror so they can see that the mirror is not just the reflect what you see, but it's to correct what you see. So in order to do that, I had to tell them to put down their fake ID and pick up their real ID. A picture of you, but everything on there a lie. That's your fake ID. A real ID is a picture of you, but everything on there is true. I had to get them to say, to see, to understand that your fake ID lies in your environment. Your fake ID lies in the mistakes that you made from the situation and circumstances you was put in. Now, if I can get you to see this real ID through the stage play, through reading my book, through the curriculum, digital curriculum that's coming out about life skills to help them learn, through the movie of Frank D. Mercury life story, if I can get you to see the real ID, maybe you would take a chance. Because it's hard to take the second choice when you only know one. So my job is to present a second choice, not just an hour speech. And I think when I got to that place, I began to understand that the NFL was just a small piece of my life. And I tell athletes, listen, yeah, I can tell you it's a privilege to play in the NFL, but really the NFL needs to look at it like you are privileged to be there as well. But if you don't know who you really are, then of course you won't last. Of course NFL stand not for long. Because you don't know who you really are. You letting the NFL dictate who you are. But that's easy to do when you don't know who you are. So my whole thing is to help athletes, role models, use their platform to go back and help those who need their help, to motivate and intrigue and empower the next generation to speak their truth, but also to change their lives so they make better decisions. So that's why I came up with these projects. That's why they're near and dear to my heart, because I understand that I can't just keep giving one-hour speeches and thinking that I made a difference and I think they're going to hear me when they've been hit with this for 15 to 20 years. My one-hour speech is definitely not enough, and well, Michael Irvin's speech may not be enough as well.
Yeah. Well, he was talking to, well, supposedly grown men. I don't know how grown we are at the age of 20, 21, 22. Especially when, the attitude with some of these guys coming into the NFL is, hey, it's flat-out party time. We've all heard the stories. I'm sure that you were there and you saw it for yourself.
Yep.
And party time is party time, and that's fine. But these guys weren't looking at what they were doing, concentrating on what they were doing, because I would have made a great NFL teammate because it was about the team. It was about the other people there and realizing, of course, that you need everybody on that team moving in the same direction and putting their, you know, as intense as they can get into their play and into their study of the playbook and all of that stuff to get out there. The coaches will try to make the calls to put you in the best position and yada, 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 you know, to win the game. But it's the players themselves that have to go out there and execute those plays. And I either would have been a good teammate or a lousy one because I would have been calling people out if I saw people dogging it. If I'm out there bleeding and I got somebody else just, I almost said something that I couldn't take back on air, but if they're out there just dogging it, you know,
right.
That causes dissension. Now, I wanted to bring something up to you, and we've got a full hour here. Frank, I've skipped the breaks. I don't want to take 15 minutes or whatever out of this program because you can only spend an hour with me, and I appreciate you coming on such short notice because this is important. One of the thoughts that I had is this stage play. In every city across this country, we have theater groups. We have people that are learning the craft, so to speak, learning how to act on stage. And I'm thinking to myself, would Frank Murphy allow individual troops in the individual cities to do their plays and go to high school auditoriums and start talking to these kids before they get out there on the street with the rest of their life, supposedly, hopefully.
You're right on it. That's the whole goal.
Really?
That is the whole goal. Yes.
I did not know that. That just came off the top of my head, my friend.
That is the goal, brother, to go to school to school, city to city, state to state with their stage play, and it's free to the schools. And give them, when we leave, we don't just want to entertain them and teach them through the stage play. We want to leave them with a book and leave them with the life skill digital curriculum so that they can start working on their life skills as far as how to handle anger, how to handle disappointment, how to handle bullying, how to handle your finance, how to handle, you know, picking role models. All those things are in the digital curriculum, because one thing we forget is the life skills. A lot of life skills are not taught. That's where the mistakes are made. I mean, everybody get a straight A's and A's and B's, but still get ate up because they can't make good decisions when it comes to life skills.
Well, and I personally, I came from a broken home. I did not have a father.
Right.
And I remember my mother telling me that you need to do this and need to do that. And I got just frustrated, and I turned around in anger. And I said to her, you keep telling me what to do, but you're not showing me how to do it. And I can remember those words. I can remember the smell in that room that day. I remember the ambience, the light. I remember it like it was yesterday. And she just stood there and looked at me and realized that there wasn't too much more she could do for me. I'd recognize what the problem was, but she couldn't help me. And a lot of what you're talking about, a lot of these kids, they're coming from single family homes. It's mom, it's the other kids. You know, we might have income that's not so great. The mother might be out of the home working a couple different jobs, and the kids got to raise themselves, and the aunts over, and the grandmother. Well, that's not the environment when parents, when mothers and fathers raise their children together. The first influence in your life is always your father. Always. That's your male role, but as it turns out, maybe sometimes in some cases, maybe it's better that the male's not in the house. Maybe the mother would have been a better role model, but we're busted, man. We're broken in this country, and there aren't enough answers. And when I started digging into what you were doing, I about fell off my chair, man, because I've been talking about this now for years, that nobody is willing to go in there and roll up their sleeves and say, okay, first thing with fixing a problem is first to correctly identify what the problems are. And so far, I've seen a lot of lip service, and I haven't seen a whole lot of action.
You're so right, and I think a lot of times, you know why I found out being in this, doing this charity thing since 2008, 2009, I've been doing it for a long time. I come to find out that if it don't involve somebody getting paid or getting money donated to them to take care of their salary or take care of their administration fees, they only give them 1% and 2% back to the communities when they raise millions of dollars. And that's the thing that saddened me, because we give anywhere between 90% to 95% back to our community. Because that's the love we have for our community. And it hurts to see a lot of these organizations get all the grants, get all the people donate to them because they sound good, or because they good old boy system, this my friend. But you have people like myself that's doing everything they possibly know how to make sure that I implement everything that I learned and that I've seen with my own eyes because I was there to impact the next generation. And me impacting the next generation don't have a color or a gender on it. That's the first thing you got to make up your mind when you're trying to help other people. It got to be really to help other people. It can't have a race on it. It can't have a gender on it. You know what? It just got to have a person on it. It got to just have a human being on it.
When you're out there helping,
you got to have compassion. Because if you don't have compassion, then that lets me know that you're side doing it. That means I'm just going to pick and choose who to help. No, you got to have compassion. Whoever comes to your programs, whoever comes from your help, whoever emails, you got to not look at them and say, oh, you from over here or you from over there. I don't care where you from. If you need help, this program is for you. If you need help, this mentorship program is for you. I'm for you. Mentor Purpose Charity is for you. And that's how I've been seeing things. That's how I operate. And no matter if it take me forever to get there or forever for somebody to say, oh, we donate this to help you, Frank. You know what? If nobody ever donate, that's fine and perfect. I know I did it for the right reasons, and I know I did it out of my heart, and I didn't do it out of a game or to be put on a pedestal. I did it to be under the pedestal so I can be a foundation and hold up our next generation and get them an opportunity that I never had.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned about the money, because that, to a lot of people, That's the end goal, to get rich. And they figure they get rich, you know, what other standard do I need to attain? And I was talking to you earlier, and this is often misquoted about the Bible and the quote about the love of money. Money isn't root of all evil. The love of money is the root of all evil. It's nothing more than a nail and a hammer, or a rake as a tool, or whatever. It's something we have to use every day. But there are people that they become very hard, soulless, when their goal is to attain money. I give you a Kanye West and hooking up with this preacher in Dallas. That this guy's attitude about preaching to his flock is God wants to see you wealthy. It's always about wealth, 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 and money, money, physical possessions. And people sit there and watch this and donate to, I mean, this is a big church. He fills this place up every single week. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, that's the wrong theology. And then Kanye West jumps on board with this guy, and it's like, no, wait a minute, this is the wrong message. This is the wrong message. If you have the self-discipline, if you have the knowledge, you have the training, you have your life goals, you can obtain those. Sometimes it comes easier or faster for others than it does for other people. But Frank, you're a living example, and when I was a younger man, same here. It didn't matter how many times you fell down. It mattered how many times you got back up. There's a lot of kids out there that can't even see that. They're in these schools right now. They feel lost. Teen suicides have gone through the roof. The country that we're leaving them is broken. Lincoln once said, a house divided can't stand. I can't see a country that's more divided than we are right now. And this has to stop. There's something very dark and very evil working behind the scenes, and it's affecting a whole lot of people, a whole lot.
I hear the things that Kanye West is doing, it's commendable. I'm grateful for his change because that's what he's seeking to do on his platform. Mm-hmm. But I think we got to remember that Kanye is still learning, just like all of us. It's just unfortunately he's in the spotlight learning.
Sure. Yeah.
So you don't get a lot of choice. I'm pretty sure he's going to figure out that a lot of these pastors are bringing him in and bringing his choir in just to, and I'm pretty sure he's going to catch on to that. I'm pretty sure they're going to sit down and say, you know what, every time I don't went to some of these churches, all they do is talk about, I'm pretty sure Kanye's pretty smart. He's going to start to figure out, we're not going to certain churches we're going to put in a agreement that we're not here to help you raise money.
Yeah.
We're here to do a sole purpose. But
I like that. Was that meant as a joke? You said sole purpose for the soul.
Yeah, a sole purpose.
Yeah. Well, I got so many things on my head. Well, let's talk about. Oh gosh. The latest and the greatest here. Who is that defensive end from Cleveland Browns and Monday Night Football?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I can't remember. I know you're talking about the one that took the helmet off.
Yeah, and took the man's helmet off of him and then beat him with his own helmet. Whoa. Yeah, he's getting ejected. He's been excused for the rest of the year, and there was some talk about, I think he should be suspended indefinitely, and maybe he can reapply to the NFL next year. Well, I did a little background on this guy. And I were listening what other people were saying about him. Yeah, did he do that? Yeah. Is that an absolute no-no? Oh, yeah, buddy, it is. Yes, it is. More people have gotten suspended from the NFL for off-field activities, let alone doing something like he did in front of God and all his people on Monday Night Football. And even his Odell Beckham Jr., and Landry on the team, two receivers, they didn't check with each their teammates, and they didn't check with the coach. They came out and flat out said that was wrong. That was dead wrong, and we're not behind that. But I did a little bit more research about this guy, and it turns out that he's a likable guy. Everybody gets along with him. He's really not a mean person, but he didn't have that self-discipline. When that moment hit and the fight ensued, and you know as well as I do, on the football field, your adrenaline, your adrenal glands are wide open. You're pumped. You're out there to do your job and do it the best way you can. You're out there making a living, and you're showing people. Maybe you're not going to be with that team next year, but there might be other people out there. Maybe you're getting a little long in the tooth, but there's another team that's looking at you going, you know what, I might be able to use that guy. So every time you hit that field, you got to give your all, 100%, play the best that you can. But it got to the point with that man where he lost his temper and he was in a fight and everything went out the window.
Yeah.
And that is sad. That is really sad that he did not have that self-control. But again, what you're speaking to, these life things, learning and putting them into practice. My God in heaven, Frank, if they did that in our schools, would do a curriculum like you're suggesting, do you think we'd have more success stories of our kids coming out of these schools than we do right now?
Let me tell you, I taught this curriculum manually for 12 years, which I went in with manually taught it, not digital. I taught it manually, and I've seen a difference in the at-risk schools, the schools that's D and F schools, and I took it into the suburbs where the schools that's wealthy, which means it costs a lot to go to the schools, almost a college price.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen a change in every last one of them. That's what made me continue to learn, continue to grow, continue to put this digital life skill curriculum together, and then that's where we at now. We're launching it next year, and it's be no excuse to no schools because we're giving it away free. So that's what we're doing. We hoping that we get companies behind us and donate and stuff so we can continue to repeat this and continue to give it away to schools and different programs. But our whole goal is to give this stuff away free, so it's no excuse to educate our kids about bullying, about guns, about suicide, about their identity, about their character, about handling their anger, their finance, greed, how to handle disappointment, how to make better decisions, who should be your role models, the truth about abuse, social media. We're talking about all that, discovering their true purpose. That's what's in the life skill curriculum, those things. And those are things that's been missing from suburb households and ghetto households. There's not a lot of life skills being taught, and that's why it's a lot of mistakes being happening right now.
Man, amen to that. We got to go here. We because this guy has been in the news. Colin Kaepernick.
Right.
I watched this whole thing play out, and I thought to myself, wait a minute. Am I correct in my figures that, 73% of the NFL players are black? Does that sound about right to you?
Yeah, that's about right.
Okay. So here we got grown men out there earning a living in some positions. as Jerry Glanville said, the NFL means not for long. If you're a running back, you're not going to last 15, 20 years. Some have, but these are exceptions to the rule. You're out there banging it, and you're going to wear yourself out. So you've got a finite amount of time to go out there and ply your craft and earn a living. And for a lot of these guys, life really starts after the NFL. That's just how they're in the trenches making their money right now, but they got plans because they're still young. You know, they're getting out of the league, and they're 29 and 30 and 31 and 32 years old. Man, that's still a babe in the woods. So they've got the rest of their life. And how many of these guys, and I've seen it myself, how many of these guys make all that money a few years out of the NFL? They're broke.
Right.
They didn't have those life skills, Frank. They didn't know how to manage stuff. They just didn't know. And there they find themselves, well, you know, look at me. I got all this bling right now and everything's cool. But they didn't know how to manage it. And all of a sudden, they're into some bad stuff and then poof, it's gone. Colin Kaepernick, I watched that game when he did the kneel down. And I looked at that and I thought, uh-oh. This is going to cause problems in all 32 teams in every locker room across this country. But a funny thing happened. It didn't. Now, there was a little bit of capitulation there of linking arms. The owner of the Dallas Cowboys came up with that one, and that's cool. Okay. But here we are with grown men out there on the field, and they all have to play together to achieve their goal. Why in God's green earth would you want to cause such dissension in a locker room that would bust that club wide open?
Well, I think you have to understand truly the purpose of what Cap is doing. I'm not saying the way he's doing it or what he, you know, everybody have their own opinion. It's a free country.
Yeah.
But I think at the end of the day, Cap was doing it for police brutality. He made that clear from the very beginning. He talked to armed forces. He talked to family members that's in the army. He talked to friends. He talked to all type of people. This was not just done out of the whim somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure he knew he was going to get some backlash. I'm pretty sure he knew people was going to twist the story in the media and make it out of what it wasn't. But at the same time, I can never speak to one man and know what he was thinking and what he feel like he's called to do and why he's called to do it, no matter what color, no matter what gender they are. Because we thought that a lot of people was doing things wrong, and because the narrative was twisted. And then we look back 20 years later, and they really did good because of what that one thing they did.
Mm-hmm.
I can't speak to that because none of us know what the history is going to be on it.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, that was his choice. And
Tim
Tebow, Tim Tebow did the same thing. Tim Tebow took a knee as well several times. I played in the NFL. We all know this, but fans may not know this, or they may don't want to know it, or they don't care to know it. There was, you know, Tim Tebow did the same thing. And he had some reasons why he did it. Took a knee during the national anthem because of things that was going on in his heart, in his mind. But he didn't get any backlash.
Yeah.
Well, so you have to look. You just got to look at all the narratives, man.
It's
right there in black and white that some stuff is just not, we have that good old boy mindset sometimes on if this person is doing this, we're going to come at him different. If this person's doing that, happens all the time. Sometimes it has nothing to do with color. Sometimes it has to do with position. Sometimes it has to do with, you know, gender. So this is what you were talking about. This is the world we're living in. It's divided.
Yeah. And there are those out there that took full advantage of that. I know why Kaepernick did what he did. But I just had this haunting thought, Frank, that, you know, I wonder if this message is going to fly. Because on our website, there's a website out there called the Free Thought Project. And what they concentrate on is police abuse. And I put a lot of their material on our website. A lot of it. We now have police out there, and not every cop is bad. Okay,
you're exactly right. Awesome cops out there.
Yeah.
Some awesome men, white, black, Hispanic, Asian, whatever they are, great men and women that has done some awesome things and will continue to do some awesome things. I just hate that a couple of bad apples give all police officers a bad name, seem like that's what's been happening, and that's not true, and that's unfortunate because we have some great men and women in uniform, and I salute them. And I thank them every day. They're out there risking their lives and not polluting the water and not using their power wrong and not trying to do the status quo because they're in fear instead of educating themselves about what they're dealing with as a police officer. I hate it that the great police officers that we have in this world, in our country, get a bad rap sometimes, and it's sad.
You know, I played a video, and this, I had it up on the website yesterday. And the Free Thought Project, I was looking at it, they only had 500 views. I put it on our website, and today Microsoft News, which is not known as truly a conservative group of people, they had the exact same story up there. And what this was is about a cop that was, he was moonlighting as a security guard at a Nordstrom, not exactly, Kmart. And two guys were in the store, made $1,000 in purchases, walked out of the store. This guy's eyeballing them. And he didn't take his eyes off him. And he walked out to get the plate off of their car. And the guy who was driving the car turned the car around and parked in front of the store. This guy came up in his unmarked and got out of the car screaming, "Let me see your driver's license. Let me see your ID. The guy's asking him, goes, wait a minute here. Why are you asking me that? I need to see your ID because you're mouthy. And he said, I wasn't mouthing off to you, sir. He was using sir. They were very polite. This guy was out of control. This was a county sheriff deputy. The county sheriff saw that. There wasn't going to internal affairs, IA, or there wasn't going to other people, and we're going to do internal investigations. Frank, he watched that video. 2 hours later, that cop, after 20 years on that force, was out in the street. There, we have a problem in this country with a certain number of them, and I'm not as conservative as you are, because I've been doing this for 27 years, and I've seen what's been going on out there. It's probably more like 15-20% of the police out there in uniform should not be in uniform. Now, the problem with that is the police departments themselves, in order to serve that community and serve it faithfully, they've got to get rid of their own bad apples. This can't end up with deaths. This can't end up with lawsuits. This has got to be cleaned up, and people have got to, and you were alluding to the whole time here, it's the responsibility. You've got to accept the responsibility of your actions. But if you don't, if you don't know what to do, Frank, you're offering another choice.
You know what? That was a good point that you made. It's the same thing as police officers not getting the proper training to handle what they're about to face. And sometimes it's different. Sometimes it's because they're in fear. Sometimes because they may be a little racist, no matter what color they are.
Mm-hmm.
All that added together spills over to be hatred, and it's not going to be a good day. It's not going to turn out successful throughout the year for that officer. But it's the same thing with athletes or young men and women that's not been properly taught how to handle life skills or handle situations. They get out there and they make bad decisions that can cost them their dream, but most importantly, can cost them their life. And that's the same thing that a couple of bad apples in the tree. And I know it's a higher percentage than what I'm saying right now. We know it's a higher percentage, but at the same time, it's still a problem when it comes to them being educated properly on how to handle, you know, African Americans, how to communicate, what's going on, how to handle anybody with DC for that matter. But we know what the percentage is when it comes to African American and police officers, white police officers. So it's not because they may don't want to, and sometimes it is for that, but most time it may be because they don't know how to properly dissect that, you know, when it comes to understanding what they're about to face because they're not being trained properly. And that's the same thing with young men and women today. They're not trained properly in life skills, so they don't know how to maneuver in this world. That's why they continue to fall off and make mistakes that send them to jail, and they come right out the same way because the residue is on them and still hasn't fixed the problem, so they find themselves in jail again. So it's a problem, brother, and I'm right there with you, that it has to be fixed. It has to be something done. More people like me and you have to step up and do what we call to do and turn this thing out, turn this thing around.
Well, and I want to play one more clip for you. This is a very short clip. This is Mike Wallace and Morgan Freeman. Go ahead and run the clip, Mike.
Which month is White History Month? Come on, tell me.
I'm Jewish.
Okay, which month is Jewish History Month?
There isn't one.
Oh, why not?
Yeah.
Do you want one?
No.
I don't either. I don't want a Black History Month. Black history is American history.
How are we going to get rid of racism?
Stop talking about it. I'm going to stop calling you a white man.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask you to stop calling me a black man. I know you as Mike Wallace. You know me as Morgan Freeman. You're going to say, well, I know this white guy named Mike Wallace. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
That is, I think, the point you've been driving here. That it doesn't matter. This, my God in heaven, we're all God's creations here. And we have got to do what needs to be done in order for our successive generations. And you nailed it. We got to give them the tools because we can't be by their side all the time. You know, They go out and get married, the husband and the wife, they go out to, you know, we're not there to give them advice. They got to have the life skills in order to start coping with, and it's harder today than it has ever been in this country. And I have been looking for people that is going to smash that color barrier, and my friend, I think you're about ready to do it in a major, major way.
And thank you. I really appreciate it. And trust me, in any way I can help, you know, with not just the color barrier, but just with life in general of sharing my story, my testimony, my adversity, that can encourage another person. I'll never forget the day that I was with the Miami Dolphins, and it was preseason, and I was like, man, we always get a room by ourselves. But this particular time, the hotel was overbooked, so we had to room up. I was upset because we had to get a roommate. I'm like, man, I need my time. You know, that traditional thing of an athlete. I want to do this everything the same. Mm-hmm. I want to stay in this bed. But I walked in the room, and he was in my bed, the one that I want, my good luck bed. So, I'm frustrated. I'm steaming. I'm like, man, I got the game tomorrow. We got a game tomorrow. I want to have a bit like this and like that. And, man, this guy kept staring at me. And I kept looking at him like, okay, I'm going to ask him, like, what's his problem? I said, hey, man, you okay? He said, how did you do it? I said, what? I said, how did I do what? He said, man, I see how people look at you in the locker room. You ain't even no star player. People always talking to you, asking you questions. He said, man, how did you do it? Because I'm on cocaine every day, and I can't stop, Frank, and I need your help. And I began to mentor him. And, man, I'll never forget the look in his family and his kid's face when they seen me about 6 months later, and they hugged me with a hug that I'll never forget. But yet I was disappointed in myself because all this time God was trying to do a hookup. He was trying to get me in that room to help them. But all this time I was thinking about myself. And, see, in this world, we always think about ourselves first, seem like it, because we want ourselves to be successful, ourselves to have good stats, ourselves to do, to be glorified for good things. But what about the person that's hurting? That day changed my life and let me know what I was called to do. And I'll never forget that moment. That was a defining moment to let me know that I'm here to mentor athletes, life coach athletes, young athletes, no matter where they from, who they with, and that's what I've been doing. These type of situations is what should motivate us. You don't have to go through it. You should hear them, and it should do something to your heart. I went all the way to the CFL 1 year, brother. I got on that plane so happy, like, man, they better pay me. I got down there, went through all the check-in. You know how hard it is. You have to go through all this check-in and stuff, and I get to Canada, and I get in my room, just get in my hotel room, and I sit down, and the phone rings. I said, hello? He said, yeah, this is the general manager. How you doing, Frank? You just got in. I said, yes, sir. He said, hey, I want you to, brother, can you take a pay cut? I say, man, why y'all just telling me this? You could have told me that before I came. And I would have told you no. I say, no, I can't take a pay cut. No, I feel like I'm worth this and that. And that. They say, we're going to have to let you go. So immediately, man, I hung up that phone. I was, like, kind of upset. And I felt the Spirit telling me, Frank, get it off. Get the attention off yourself. And I walked around that hotel, every player that I seen, and said, hey, man, you doing okay? How you doing? But I just got let go. How am I going to take care of my family? I just got cut and released from a job that I wanted so bad. When I'm walking around the hotel taking attention off myself and I'm talking to players and nobody needed my help. So I said, okay, all right, I guess nobody needs my help. The limo pull up. The limo pull up and say, hey, you ready? I say, oh, yes, sir, I'm glad. I say, I got in the limo going back to the hotel. And he say, man, let me just drop you off. I say, yeah, man. I say, man, I don't know why they brought me way down here for this. He say, I do. I say, huh, what you mean? He said, because I was just getting ready to commit suicide, but I had to pick you up.
Oh, my God.
I said, hey, man, pull over, brother. He said, you're going to miss your plane. I said, I don't care about no plane. Pull over, brother. I'm going to talk to you. And we talked, and, man, we hugged. I say, man, you got to know God is real. He interrupted my life. All that I had going, he interrupted my life to bring me all the way to Canada to cut me so I'll be in this car with you. You got to know you love, brother. You got to know somebody care about you. Because wow. that just don't happen.
No, it doesn't. No, you know, and I loved football. I mean, I just loved the game. I loved the spirit and the camaraderie and the hard work of the game. But I got to tell you something. I was a walk-on for the Cleveland Browns, and I was fast. I had these little bony legs. I had those fast twitch muscles. I could run a 9800. And at the time, there was a guy that played for the Dallas Cowboys, Bobby Hayes. He was the fastest man in the world. He ran a 9-second flat 100. And I was 8-tenths of a second off of that. For some reason in my entire life, I was always throwing things up and down and in the air. Without even thinking about it, Frank, I knocked something off a counter. I'd grab that before it hit the floor. My reactions, I was a walk-on. I went out there. They gave me two routes, patted me on the head, and said, thanks, kid. I never played scholastic football. I never played high school football, and I certainly didn't play football in college. And I was just a walk-on, hoping that I could get a chance to get in the NFL and somebody could help me and train me. But you know what, Frank? If I would have gotten a job in the NFL and gotten a bag full of money with the piss-poor life skills that I had, you and I wouldn't be having this conversation right now because I'd already be dead. I'd already be dead. There's one thing that is missing out there in people's lives, and that's direction and hope. And you, my friend, yeah, you have been picked. You haven't had an exactly rosy career in football. You kept getting knocked down. You kept getting back up. You kept trying. But I think I know you well enough that you know that that path that you went down is the one that you had to go down for you to arrive at where you're at today.
You're right, man. And nothing makes my heart better than to see me helping somebody that got a broken heart. My heart don't pump regularly the way it should until I see another brother, another sister, no matter where they from, what background, see their heart mended. I'll never forget playing in the game, man. You go to this all-star game before you get drafted, you know, you get picked. And I was on the team, and this other running back, he had great stats, and he was in the game, and he fumbled. Bam! The ball came out. That NFL coach said, get out! And they put me in. So I had a touchdown, I had some stats, and I looked over there to the sideline, and I seen that young man face. He was a teammate. I barely knew him because, you know, all-star, you get picked from all type of teams. So Sure. You don't know who they is.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at his face, man. And, man, I felt so bad. And I said, so he said, Murphy, go back in. Continue to stay in. He ain't getting back in. So you go in. I say, Coach, man, my hamstring is so tight right now, man.
You didn't. You didn't.
I say, it hurt, man. He say, what happened? I say, Coach, it hurt, man. I just, let me go over here and stretch out. And, man, he said, oh, man. He said, get in there. He told the other guy to get in. And I walked over there and sat down. It was nothing wrong with me. But my compassion could not have let him not get an opportunity. He went back out there and had a great, finished the game great. Scored a touchdown. And
Did he get signed?
Yeah, he got signed. How long he stayed, I didn't know. But his opportunity was there because of him going back in there redeeming himself. And that's what was important to me. I could have stayed in and ran the stats up. And when he came to the sideline, he looked in my eyes, and I could tell. He said, I know what you did. I said, man, I'm a little tight, man. That's just how I go, man. I say, man, but I'm proud of you.
Well, by the way, but before I forget this, I'm looking at the screen right now. A caller called in and said that your book is available on Amazon, but a caller called in and said there was only one copy of his book left on Amazon. There are a couple of used copies, but only one new one. So I want to tell the folks that, yeah, you can go to Amazon. I keep checking that, but it's also at Barnes & Noble and Better World Books. These are all online, and you can order his book. And, folks, let me tell you something. And this is coming from my heart. There are times in your life that somebody might be speaking to you and you don't know what language they're talking because you don't want to hear it. And then there are times in your life that you wish somebody would talk to you and you don't hear anything but silence. If you got somebody, why don't you get a copy of this book? Let them read this. This isn't a dress down. This isn't being preached at. This isn't being yelled at. No. Hey, check this out, man. Check out this guy's life. get a book for somebody that might be on the cusp of maybe going to the wrong place or maybe needs a little boost going to the right place. There have been mentors in my life, short periods of time, Frank, very short. But I saw them and I respected them, and that always stuck in my heart. It always stuck in my head. And I, as a kid, as much trouble as I was in, you ain't the only one who was behind bars at 15 years old. Trust me. And I was just a little white kid from Sandusky, Ohio. By the way, it's John Gruden's hometown. But, you know, they're mentors. Real mentors are few and far in between. And what you're doing, here's my fervent prayer and hope for you, Frank, that other guys in the NFL that don't think that it's a right to be on that field, but really a privilege to play the game and to make that kind of money. You know, it's great that a lot of these guys go out in the community and they go play basketball with the kids and this, that, and the other. Well, these kids don't need help learning how to play basketball or learning how to play football. They need to win in the game of life. And I'm hoping, I don't know if this is going to happen, but here's my prayer, that other NFL players see what you're doing and chip in and start to help you out in this journey. Because, you know, this is a long journey, my friend. And the first steps are taking place right now. And I have this feeling in my heart that you're going to affect a lot of people. That you are going to be a mentor, and your words are going to be mentoring a lot of young people in this country, both black and white.
And thank you. I received that prayer, and I thank you so much for every opportunity you give, not just me, but everybody on the airwaves. It may not be said enough, but I just want to tell you thank you, because without the airwaves and without what you do, to help us get our voice out of there and our platform out there, because people don't know us. You know, people don't know about us sometimes. And my goal, and you be saying everything that I've been saying, and that's why I know we entwine. My goal is to help athletes understand that the most important thing you can do is off the field, not on the field. If you have the heart to help people off the field, trust me, your on the field will take care of itself. And I constantly life coach and let them know that only you can put definition behind your name. Your mom and dad, your mentor, your coaches, they can help you and assist you, but they can't put definition behind your name.
That's
because
it.
If you don't know your purpose, your God-given purpose, it's just like not knowing your name. If you don't know your purpose in life, not your purpose on the field or on the basketball court, not your purpose in these different occupations and jobs, I'm saying if you don't know your God-given purpose, why you on this earth, could be use compassion to help others, then it's like not knowing your name. We'll never know your name,
Frank. We're out of time here, and I so much appreciate you coming on this program. I really do. And the website is, go ahead,
www.mwpcharity.org. that's mwpcharity.org.
Right.
www.mwpcharity.org.
And I want to get a copy of your book, The Man Behind the Helmet. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and Better World Books. Frank, you will be hearing from me in the future, sir.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, sir.
All right, and thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.